Sorry. Okay, Ben, you can start from here. So, Ben didn't hear his phone ring, so now I'm answering the phone. Hey, Ben. How's it going?
My phone never rang.
Huh, that's
And
weird.
it hasn't even told me that I have messages, so
Okay.
I don't know what's going on. I did when I turned my phone on earlier today, I did notice that it said carrier updates, carrier settings are updated. So
Oh,
that
okay.
might have something to do with it.
So, when you get today's audio file, there will be a point where I forget that I'm still recording and say, "Huh, well, maybe you'll call me back." And then I forget that I didn't stop recording, and then there's some dead air, and then I start talking.
All
And there's another like minute and 23 seconds of just me going, "Huh, Ben's not there. I guess I'll leave a message," which I'm not going to send to you because why would you?
Right. Also, I just received notice of your voicemail,
Aha.
which is weird.
Carrier update.
Carrier update. AT&T,
That's
work
fun.
on it.
Oh man, I have AT&T as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, without AT&T, our podcast would be much more difficult. Thanks, AT&T.
Although it's, people don't call me very often, and I communicate primarily via text these days.
That's because you're a millennial,
I
apparently.
am not a millennial. How dare you,
I
sir?
know, right? What I'm saying is these things, millennials,
Yeah.
all they do is go on Twitter and do, and I was like, I was doing that.
Know. But the last time I received a phone call, I didn't actually get the call. My parents called me a couple days ago, and it never rang. I just got the notice that they left me a voicemail. So, I'm not too
Interesting.
upset that phone calls aren't coming through. It's not that big of a deal to me, honestly, but I should probably look into it.
Yeah, you might want to look into it. But again, I remember this is back in, I don't know, the early 2000s, I guess. There was a woman who had a mobile device, and all it was texting. There was no phone for it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was great. Speaking about do you remember the Runcible?
I do not. What is it?
The Runcible was a phone, and they had a Kickstarter campaign for it. There was like $350 or something like that for a phone that was kind of like a pocket watch. It was round. It had a wooden back. And the concept that they had was that the phone would be like non-intrusive. The idea of being like you could check it when you wanted to, but it wasn't going to ring, it wasn't going to give alerts or anything like
Oh,
that.
you mean like the default settings is silence?
Well, the idea is that you would check it when you wanted to.
Right.
And it had other stuff too, like its maps would take you along a scenic route rather than the quickest way
And
there.
it was round? Like the form
Yeah.
factor was round? Like a
It was
donut?
round, like a pocket watch,
Like a
kind
pocket
of.
watch.
Yeah. But from what I understand, and again, this is something that I don't know for sure, because we're keeping it wrong. I think that it sold out, but then they had a hard time actually building the device or mailing it out to people or whatever.
That's not the first time I've heard of that happening where a Kickstarter has been for some sort of device has been successful, and the creators have not been able to deliver on the promises made in the Kickstarter.
I believe that happened with a comic book as well, a comic book or a book
Yeah.
or some sort of internet thing where I remember if I remember correctly, the person like burned everything that they were currently working
Oh,
on
jeez.
as a protest to all of the emails he kept getting asking when his thing was going to be done, which to me sounds a little bit too much like, Like, if what I would like is if he would have shown every single page that he had worked on first to the camera and then set it on fire.
I think,
as opposed to a big stack of stuff that you set on fire, which, of course, you know, as we have seen in the current climate, somebody just throwing out a whole bunch of paper so that it looks like there is something when in fact there isn't.
There is a...
I'm not accusing that guy of that, by the way.
There's a strange, I think, psychological phenomenon that goes on when somebody gets a large amount of success really, really quickly. There's part of you that probably just cannot deal with all of that. And so the creator of this comic book was probably just, you know, he couldn't deal with his popularity and probably would have been better off hiring an intermediary, like an agent or a manager, to deal with all this stuff while he focused on the book, comic book.
Yeah, and the one thing I'll also say is, because I've had this happen to me, like, as soon as you get a little bit of success, right?
Yeah.
You forget how lucky you are to be successful in something or to be wanted. I don't know how to describe it, but, when I was in college, I had a little bit of a modeling career is what I would say, is that people would take pictures of me doing weird stuff and it went really, really well. And somebody called and said that they wanted me to, you know, take more pictures.
Eyewitnesses to the crimes you committed in college. It was not, I wouldn't consider that a modeling career.
Oh, no, no. Come on, Ben. Wait. It's true. This guy called me and said, hey, yeah, I'm a photographer. I heard that you, are available to like do shoots and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I need a little bit more of a notice than a day. I'm sorry, but I can't help you.
Yeah.
When I could have gone, I was not doing anything at the time. I could have gone and it would have been fun.
What stopped you? You just didn't feel like it?
Not even that. I just sort of, pride just starts messing with you eventually.
Yeah.
And you start, as you start thinking you're bigger than other people, or that you're super important, it goes badly. Now, I will say this. There are certain artists who are crazy in certain ways. Like where there was a guy, he made ceramic cups, I believe. And someone would ask, how much is this ceramic cup? And he'd say, that ceramic cup is $10. How much is this one? That one is $10,000. And they look exactly the same. Stuff like that, I love it. I'm down for it. No problem whatsoever. Just
hoping somebody buys the $10,000 cup.
Yes, exactly. Now this is an interesting thing. And again, I'm not on this show to start beef with anybody. I do not want there to start beef. But are you familiar with Julie Cruz at all?
I am not.
Julie Cruz worked with David Lynch on the Twin Peaks soundtrack.
Okay.
She worked with him also on Blue Velvet, I want to say. I'm pretty sure. Yes, I believe that is the case. And then they had some sort of a weird falling out. The way that she described it later, not at the time it was happening, but later, was that she got too egotistical.
For David Lynch's taste?
Well, no. Just like she was criticizing herself. And she was like, I didn't really, you know, I forgot who I was and where I was. And, you know, when you're in that kind of, this is not a quote and I may be wrong, but when you're in that sort of egotistical state, you can lose sight of where you are in a relationship. And she lamented the fact that they had had a falling out.
Yeah.
Now, subsequently, after the new season of Twin Peaks came out, she was less inclined to remember what she had said earlier because she got mad at him again. So I don't know. I don't know. And, you know, people are kind of split. You know, people take sides and all that. I don't take sides. Ben, when it comes to two celebrities, I have no idea about.
I don't. But you know, I don't really worry myself with the private lives of famous people.
Exactly. Well, this was a professional problem, I think. But still, same difference.
Yeah.
But speaking about the private lives of professional people, I got a chance to listen to an episode of I Was There Too with a guy who was in the Twin Peaks series.
Okay.
And it was pretty great. It was a fun little.
Was he in the original one or just the new one?
Yeah,
he was in
the new one. Not the original one. He was in the new one. And it was one of those cases of, you know, you've got people now who have seen the original one and who, you know, but it's just like Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. Oh, I remember watching this with my mom and now I'm in this one, but this has always existed. It, you know, this is never like Saturday Night Live for us, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's always been Saturday Night Live. It was never the new thing, which is kind of interesting to think about.
Doctor Who's another case of that.
What's that?
Doctor Who is another case of that. I've heard I've heard David Tennant say that one of his dreams when he was a kid was to be the Doctor on Doctor Who. Yeah. I can't imagine how many thousands upon thousands of kids whose dreams that was when they were children. But, you know, for that one young Scottish lad, it came true.
And also for another young Scottish lad, Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, all you got to do is be Scottish and really into Doctor Who and be one of those two guys, and you could be the Doctor.
And Peter Capaldi kept his Scottish accent for his version of the Doctor. I've only seen the first season of the Peter Capaldi season.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I'm going to probably watch it all at one point in time.
Yeah. Well, I want to start watching it again when the new Doctor takes over.
Yeah, I think that's a good time to jump in.
With you. That was my conundrum, and I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I don't know if I should just start watching it again or if I should go back and catch up on. I think that I'm missing two seasons.
Yeah, here's what I would say, and because I feel the same way, I believe that it's a good idea to start fresh with this one, because that way you're going to see how well they do, because they're going to be new viewers. You'll get to see how well they do in making it work for new viewers. And if you go through it and you're like, this doesn't make any sense, then go back. That's what I say.
And just like if there are too many references to the past two seasons,
exactly.
At that point, go back and retroactively watch
this
those.
Well, this is just like when we were with the Snarfax. And if you don't know what the Snarfax is, go and check.
Well, I mean, I should do that anyway because I have a terrible memory for TV shows that I watch. And so it's possible that they make references to seasons and villains that I have seen and I just don't remember them. That happens to me all the time.
Hey, Ben, can we talk about the creative process for a second?
Okay.
I had a conversation with somebody about this, and you tell me if you think that this is like possible. And here's the thing. I think about it because of the work that you and I did. Also, Ben.
What?
I can hear you typing.
I'm typing the show notes.
Okay.
I typed the notes as we record. That way I don't have to
I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to
I'm Googling creative process.
Yeah. Can you hear it on your microphone? That's the only thing I'm worried about.
It's a loud keyboard.
Okay. Because I'm going to start eating again pretty soon. Kidding. Paul's angry because he's hungry.
He's being hangry. Snippy.
Let's be mean to Ben.com. No.
Every episode, there's a segment of Paul's a jerk to Ben.
I try not to have it happen, though. I like you, Ben. I like you so much, and I respect you, and I think about all the help you've given me over the years.
All right, so let's talk about the creative process.
Goes like this. I was saying to a friend today that improvisation and writing are actually kind of the same thing. It's just that when you're writing, if you're writing by yourself, you're doing improv with yourself and then writing it down. And if you're writing with somebody else, it's improv and you're writing it down while you're doing it. That the creative process that you go through when you write something is similar to the creative process that you go through when you improv something. It's getting something from your head, putting it out there.
Yeah.
It's just that you can edit when you write, like you're editing audio or video or whatever.
Right.
And from that, I extrapolated, and this is where I don't know if you'll agree with me or not. Film. You can make a film without any problem without writing a single word of a script, because what you're doing when you're writing a script for a film is you're taking the ideas you have in your head about what it's going to look like and writing it down on paper, and you can skip that step, especially with the equipment that we have available to us today, and just shoot a lot of footage. Right. Try to get the image you have in your mind. Shoot a lot of footage and then edit it the way that you want to so that it all fits together.
So you're basically talking about shooting a film without bothering to write it first?
Without writing it. You have it in your head, or you do it as you go along, but
just sounds like lazy filmmaking to me.
It could be lazy filmmaking, but here's the way I was thinking about it. Back when this idea of writing scripts started, right? You film cost money,
right?
You got to make sure that when you're there, and time is money, obviously, but you got to make sure that when you're there, you get the thing that you need and you go on to the next thing. You don't waste a lot of film trying different things,
right? Well, that's changed.
Now that we have digital, it's a lot easier to like mess around and do stuff and all that. But even more so, the standard of writing a script was around before Jodorowsky's Dune, where Jodorowsky used Mobius to draw what the camera was going to see. Now, I'm sure storyboards happened before then, but that storyboard in and of itself made a huge impact in Hollywood.
Is that in the Jodorowsky's Dune?
I said Jodorowsky, but I could be wrong. Jodorowsky. It talks about it in there.
In the movie.
They made a 1,000 page script, quote unquote. But it was like notes and camera shots.
Yeah, the storyboarding process is something that I've been trying to adopt more and more as we film more panel jumpers, just because it's a great. It's a great tool to use to make sure that you do use your time efficiently on set. I am trying to schedule the next shoot of the panel jumper. And yeah, we have essentially unlimited film. I mean, there is a limit, but you know, it's you don't want to waste your time or anybody else's time improving the film while you have everybody there and in costume and ready to go.
Right. And that, I guess my thought about that, right, is that the thing that people use the script and the storyboards for sometimes, I'm not saying every time, I'm just saying sometimes, is to have that idea, you know, in a solid form so that when it comes time to have the equipment there, you're not trying to remember what it was you were going to do. But I think that if someone has, and again, I might be wrong about this, but if someone has a vision of what they want to do, if they see it in their head, they could show up with the camera and the audio stuff and get it on there and then move on to the next thing. I think you could do it. I think that you could...
The storyboarding is also just so everybody's on the same page and not just like the cinematographer.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say is that, in my opinion, I could be wrong again, but you could, you know, for the purpose of making a film with everybody like working together,
yeah,
you could make a film that's just storyboarded that doesn't have a script. I think the script is necessary for, like, most necessary for investors so that they can read it and understand what you're going to do so they don't have to ask a lot of questions.
Well, a script is also necessary not just for investors but for you as a filmmaker to actually know what you're doing.
Yeah, I don't know if you need to know what you're doing.
I think you need to know what you're doing. You at least need to know. Okay, so here, how many times have you sat down to watch somebody's film who just started filming stuff with no goal in mind, no story?
This is my point, is that the actual filmmaking, and you and I could disagree on this. I definitely don't want to, you know, say that my idea is the only right one. I think that no matter what you do with the rest of the stuff, the true filmmaking happens in the editing room. And the rest of it is giving the editor the materials they need in order to put the film together. Well, that's a script, that's the audio, that's the, you know, all those pieces, right? And maybe this is where we agree with each other. All those pieces to ensure that it's the right amount of pieces. All those pieces need to have a good map.
Yeah.
To get all those pieces in the right place. Also, what I guess I'm saying is that I think that only a director should edit their own films, but that's not true because I love Fury Road. And that was a different editor and director. So maybe, I don't know what the heck I'm talking about then.
Well, I've heard said that a film is made in three stages. In the writing, in the filming, and in the editing. They are all very important parts of the filmmaking process. And without, you know, each step, the previous one, you know, it doesn't mean anything, or you need to, you know, each step needs to give its proper, needs to get, you know, make sure that it does its job for the following step, right?
Yes.
Which is why when I film stuff, I make sure that I edit it. That way, when I edit it, I only have to yell at myself because I forgot to do something or I did something terribly.
Yes.
I haven't gotten to that point where somebody else has edited something that I filmed, unless it's like, if I filmed like a stage play or something, just handed the footage off to people. But yeah.
I'm going to limit this question to the panel jumper. Okay?
Okay.
Because I could ask this about... You've done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm limiting it to the panel jumper. How many times are you in the editing room and you have to go and reshoot something? Have you ever had to do that?
No, I have not had to do that. If the panel jumper is unique in that if I have to redo something, I could just, if I have clean audio, I could just make an effects shot out of it and just disregard the video altogether. Yeah. But we did have to go back out. If you remember on Cherub, we had to have a small bit of reshoots with you at one point.
Oh no, what'd I do?
it wasn't you. It was the film was too overexposed. It was an outside shot.
Oh, I don't remember that, but I believe it.
Oh.
Oh, wait. I'm vaguely remembering it, but that could just be my brain filling in.
It was your character walking down the sidewalk and then like bending over and picking up a piece of paper that's attached to a rope. And
yeah,
it said something
like,
tie me around your waist, and you're like, okay, so you tie it around your waist, and then you're pulled off screen.
We were in a neighborhood.
Yeah, it was
right?
Outside.
It wasn't just,
that's
it
why
wasn't
it was,
at somebody's house.
Right.
It was at a, yeah.
That's why it was
that.
Overexposed is because we couldn't see the viewfinder of the camera very well because it was a sunny day.
Oh, gotcha.
So, I'll blame myself, but it's actually Michael's fault.
speaking of, it's actually Michael's fault. I'm kidding. Anyone who is wondering what we're talking about, I believe Cherub the Vampire with Bunny Slippers is still available.
Yeah.
On the internet?
Absolutely. You can go to cautionzero.net to find it.
Yeah. Ben and I were in it. Ben was in it more than I was. But also my wife, Jennifer Pratt.
Yeah.
Before we were married, I think.
I honestly don't remember the timeline. We recorded Cherub after the Front Page closed.
Okay.
Were you guys married during? Well, I know we had the 5-minute bachelor party at Spin the Bottle during the run of the Front Page, but I don't remember when exactly.
Oh wait, then yeah, we probably had gotten.
I think you
we were married on October 9th, so whenever that was.
Of 2005?
2005, yeah.
Wow, we've been doing web series for 17 years.
Wait a second, what?
Yeah.
How is that even 2000?
How are we not rich and famous by our web series?
Wait, when did we do a web series in 2000? What did we do?
Oh, I'm sorry, not 17 years. Math is hard.
12 years?
Yeah.
12 years? What about 12? Yeah.
12 years. Still, though. The point stands.
Yeah. All right. So, here's my question.
Yeah.
Ben, are you ready for corrections?
Yeah. Let's see if she...
She did. I know for a fact because she told me.
All right. Wow, there's a lot.
Corrections. Ding.
Yeah. All right. So
yeah, Jennifer. Okay, so Jennifer, my wife. Nope, not gonna do it. I almost did.
Almost do that.
Yeah, it's because other podcasts do it already, and I try to give you the new stuff. There is no new stuff though. Oh my gosh, Ben, Betty, and I. When we call for Betty, which isn't happening yet, but when we do. We're going to have to discuss the fact that I have crossed over into the dad trying to be cool territory.
What does that mean?
It's happened. We'll talk about it when she gets here.
But remind
me when I say, right. What are we going to talk about?
Chances are I won't remember that, but anyway.
Okay. But here's the thing. We get stuff wrong. Ben and I, when we had been doing the podcast for a little while, we decided that we would do an experiment in that we would see how well we could answer questions without looking stuff up on the internet. And that went pretty well, but we did get a lot of things wrong. We had people write in and say things that we did wrong, corrections for what the answers were. And then we realized we didn't even need to have questions because during the course of our discussions, we would say wrong things without any questions prompting us. And so now we have a segment called Corrections where people can write in and tell us what we got wrong in our last episode.
Right.
So far, Steven's done it. Jose Amador's done it. Jennifer Pratt has done it. And you can do it too. just write to Ben's email address at yahoo.com@gmail.com. Did I get that right?
I think it's just Ben's email at yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Oh, sorry about that. Ben's email at yahoo.com@gmail.com. Just write in and let us know. And today, Ben, I don't know if you got this message from her, but there was a saga where Jennifer had gotten a lot of the stuff answered and then her notes got destroyed.
I did receive that text.
She had to redo them, and she did.
She did do them.
And here they are.
With gusto. All right.
Yes.
Number one, we were talking about the term hipster and where it came from last week. And she says, hipster is a variant of hepcat or hepster. Both were common terms in the 1940s, referring to people into the bebop jazz scene, which then morphed into the beat poet scene, which then begot beatnik, which then begot bohemian, which then begot hippie, which then begot, I'm done. End quote. So yeah, I had thought that hipster was a variant of hippie, and I was somewhat correct, I guess, according to this.
Well, nice. I wanna bring back the 1940s slang because hepcat is great.
Hepcat, yeah.
I like it.
All right. We were also talking about the phone numbers that you dial when you need to seek assistance. And you say you dialed 411. I said when I was a kid, we dialed 0 for operator. She says 411 is actually still in use. Its main function is directory assistance and has been around since the 1930s. 0 for operator serves the same function. You can either dial 411 or 0, and the result will still be the same. And a little bit of extra tidbit here. If you dial 0 from your cell phone, you will get a prompt for emergency services or directory assistance. Press 1 for an emergency or 2 for directory assistance.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Moving on.
And I remember the one thing I remember about 411 is I think it was area code 411 and then 1212 or 2121 would get you directory assistance anywhere in that area. It would get you directory assistance for that area code, because that's what I used when I was looking for the Clown College in Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Yeah, there was,
and they did not have it.
I didn't know that 411 has been around since the 30s. I thought that was a relatively new thing. I do remember that back in the late 90s, early 2000s, before everybody had a smartphone, there were a lot of these different like phone numbers that you can use at a payphone to call, collect, or to use like an account to pay for the call instead of having to put money into the machine. You don't see those anymore, do you?
Like not so much.
1-800-COLLECT and things like that.
Oh, you know, when those things started, I was talking to somebody else about this. There were some places where, so you would dial a number, right? And then it would say, what carrier would you like to use for this long distance call?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And there were carriers who named themselves stuff like, I don't know.
Or I don't care.
And I don't care or whatever.
Oh, they could be called I don't carrier.
Oh my gosh, that's great. They charge like $19 a minute.
Yeah.
And I guess it was the business model of, if even one person doesn't fight this, then I'll do pretty well for myself or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I forget. Because I was going to say something else. I forget what it was.
Okay, well then let's move on.
Yes.
We were talking about Retreat that plays on a base, on an army base or a military base at the end of the day. Because Trump
taps,
and Hannity were having an interview and they didn't stop what they were doing.
Yeah.
And that's what you're supposed to do. Number 3. When Retreat plays on a poster base, you stop, you just do. It's actually really shocking to see someone carry on walking while it's playing. And she goes on to say, a couple of times when I was a 13-year-old, I would keep walking and my friends would just be like, no, stop, just stop. It was really like, if she continued on, she may lose him as friends because you just don't.
Yeah.
After...
And that's... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
After the whole Trump fiasco came out, somebody posted a video of Robin Williams on a base, I think in Afghanistan, where right in the middle of his set, Retreat starts playing. And so the entire audience just stands up and turns around and faces the flag. And so Robin Williams just stops and he takes his hat off and he just stands there. And so the video is just him standing there for however long it is, like a minute or something. And then just continuing on with the show, and he didn't know what was going on. He's not an army dude, and I think that might have been the first time that he's had a set where he's experienced Retreat. The other cool thing about the video, and if you dear listener should look it up, there's a part in the video where a dude in uniform is standing at the foot of the stage filming Robin Williams. I think he's either he's filming Robin Williams or he's a security guard or something. And when Retreat plays, a buddy of his runs over, throws him a hat, and he puts his hat on, and then continues saluting the flag. So I guess if you're in uniform, you put your hat on.
Yes, that is. I remember. Well, here's the thing. All right. Now this is for the United States Air Force in 1995 to 1996. When you are outside, you are not supposed to take your hat off if you're in uniform.
Right.
You're supposed to keep your hat on. When you're inside, you take your hat off.
Right.
Unless you're armed, in which case you keep your hat on the entire time, inside or outside.
Really?
Yes.
That's how people inside know if you're armed, you still have your hat on?
That at least, like I said, in the United States Air Force, 1995, 1996. That is correct.
Wow.
And that was one of the things. There are a couple of other things. I'm not going to say all of them on this podcast, but there are a couple of other things that I realized you wouldn't know unless you were, unless you went through basic training. And going through basic training trains you very, very well to do all that stuff. Right. So that you, it's instinct. Even now, there's still some stuff that I do that's just instinct from that sort of training. And so what I'm saying about all that is that someone trying to impersonate a member of the armed forces, if they don't get that, same thing with haircuts and what all, you know, there are so many things that are, you know, prescribed, right?
Yeah.
You as a member of the United States military will be able to spot someone who just isn't right in that way. And that retreat thing, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Like if somebody doesn't respect those rules, you're going to look at them a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've seen it before where, a bunch of guys are sitting around and complaining about someone that they saw who ran inside so that they didn't have to,
right,
you know, respect the rules. So,
right.
Yep.
All right. Moving on. Number four. We were talking about Pecos Bill. You were talking about Pecos Bill.
Yep.
And she says, Pecos Bill and his path. Paul suggested that Pecos Bill could call on the path, and it would arrive, getting him to where he needed to go. The only thing I could find was that Pecos Bill harnessed a tornado and made it dig the path for the Rio Grande River to rescue the farmers from a severe drought.
Okay. Yeah, it was in a book that I read. I thought it was Pecos. I thought it was Pecos Bill. Could have been Davy Crockett. Could have been. It was an American tall tale. And the idea was that this path, P-A-T-H,
yeah,
was an entity that could like run through a forest, basically. And so if you got lost, you'd whistle for it. The path would show up.
Gotcha.
Now, it's possible, you know, there are lots of books about tall tales, some written by, you know, contemporary authors. So this could have been just not really a standard. It could have been just one written for the book that I was reading. I don't know for sure. But the same concept kind of made its way into Doom Patrol by Grant Morrison.
Okay.
Which you might be familiar with from...
I haven't read it, but I know of it.
Oh, it is one of my favorite... The Grant Morrison run of Doom Patrol. One of my favorite comics of all time.
Yeah.
And there's a... There's a I guess you could call it a superhero, but it's an inanimate thing. It's Danny the Street. Danny the Street is a transvestite street that is able to appear in other cities.
You mean that street goes both ways?
Oh my gosh, Ben. I have been a fan of Doom Patrol for a really long time. That idea never struck with me. But here's the thing. You know French, and I know French. there was a famous drag performer named Danny LaRue.
Right.
At one point in time.
Yeah.
And so it was a play on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and the question is, of course, how can a street be a transvestite? The idea that Grant Morrison put into the comic was that there were all these like gun stores and things like that that had like very beautiful pastel signage with like flowing script and things like that. So it, you know, for the time that it was written, it wasn't. It was kind of a progressive kind of thing. I've noticed this sometimes. That as time goes on, things that were sort of progressive become maybe less so.
More mainstream?
Well, it's not even that. It's like, oh, this thing is this is a drag street because a hardware store has pretty flowers on it. Well, that's kind of, assuming a lot because it's in gender roles, that
Right.
male stuff is hardware stuff, female stuff is flowers.
It's also a different kind of play on words because there is an actual street type called a drag strip.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But the big thing is, at the time it was kind of subversive and cool.
Yeah.
Nowadays, maybe a little bit too on the nose. Things, people talk about things aging well or not aging well.
Yeah.
At the time, that was a good thing. It was kind of cool. Nowadays, I don't know exactly. Maybe it's a given and already too much. But that's a problem that I was contemplating earlier. This idea of like, I don't know, you were old enough when this happened, but when I've said this on the podcast before, but I wanted to reiterate it. When I was getting into the Air Force, Don't Ask, Don't Tell had just started.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And when Don't Ask, Don't Tell ended, right?
Yeah.
It was, yay, finally Don't Ask, Don't Tell is over because, it was kind of a shameful period of in the military history.
Right.
And again, as an old guy, I mentioned this at before that happened, before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there was a thing on the form that you filled out whenever you joined the military that asks, are you a homosexual? And if you would type yes, if you were to indicate yes, you would be kicked out. You wouldn't even get in at all.
Right. They would just automatically deny your application.
Exactly. And so now, when Don't Ask, Don't... So then, I should say, when Don't Ask, Don't Tell passed,
They took that
it
question
was...
off the application, I'm assuming.
They marked the question through with a brown marker that made the question still entirely legible,
Right.
as if to say, hey, this concept is still here,
Yeah.
but they made us do this, so I'm doing it now,
Right.
if that makes sense. But then, yeah,
Or
then it
we also
changed.
printed off all these applications. We don't have any budget to modify it and make any
Well,
more, so.
that's also kind of a smart thing, but how much are you paying for markers? I'm just saying, after a while,
Or some dude whose job
probably
it is to go
still.
through it and very specifically cross it off, but make sure it's still legible.
Now, Ben, I am running into an issue where I keep hearing the cat meowing, and I don't know if anybody is here to let the cat out. So I am gonna leave the room for a second. No, no one is here. The cat is by her lonesome, staring
Oh.
at the door with her big cat
I think
eyes.
we've said this before. Once you open the door, I guarantee you she will just stand there and look outside.
Okay, so it looks like I got some stuff in the mail.
Neat. What did you get?
Well, we're gonna find out.
Hey, while you're
All right,
looking through
let's
your
see.
mail, let's finish up these corrections. We got a couple more to go through.
Oh yeah, sure.
We were talking about we were actually trying to figure out the name of a congresswoman from California.
Yeah.
And I looked it up later. I think you were talking about Kamala Harris because she's
I was talking about Kamala
yeah.
Harris. Yes,
So,
that is exactly right.
but number five is Paul referenced, quote, "There is no one in this country who got rich on their own," end quote. He thought it was a congresswoman from California. No, it is Elizabeth Warren, U.S. Senator from Massachusetts. So.
Right, and did you say Gabby Giffords or Elizabeth Warren when we were talking about when I made that statement? Because you were talking about someone other than Kamala Harris at that point.
I don't think I mentioned Gabby. I may have mentioned Tulsi Gabbard, who's a congresswoman from Hawaii.
No, I think the thing I was responding to was you talking about Elizabeth Warren.
Ah, okay.
We have to go through it. So we'll have a correction to the correction in the next thing. So I was talking about Kamala Harris. I do know that, I mean, if you listen to the episode again, I was talking about Elizabeth Warren when I said that you didn't build that thing. Because yeah, she was good. But no, Kamala Harris is the person that if we could, if it would be an Al Franken Kamala Harris ticket,
Franken Harris. If he's on, yeah. He says he's not going to be on the he's not seeking the office currently. But maybe he's saying that. But if he does. I would love him to be at the top of the ticket, just so it could be Franken Harris or Franken Warren, whatever it is. I just want Franken something.
Yeah, well, the big thing about all of this is that I like them better as senators, because then you can do that committee thing all the time.
Right.
So I'm looking what I got in the mail, by the way.
Yeah.
Is my Fire Walk With Me Blu-ray, which I'm pretty excited about. It's it is the Criterion Collection approved by David Lynch. Fire Walk With Me, but also more importantly, the missing pieces, which are a bunch of different things. And it's great.
Neat. Congratulations. I can't remember the last time I bought a brand new DVD. I don't even have a Blu-ray player.
But there's one more thing that I'm getting in here. Do we have more corrections?
We have one more.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right. Eminem's Guinness World Record is very specific. We were talking about Rap God, I think.
Yeah.
And she goes on to say, the Guinness World Record is very specific, which is most words in a hit single. Averaging 4 words a second over 6 minutes, 1,560 words total. So even if Bone Thugs and Harmony's Busy Bone is the fastest rapper, that's not relevant. Hit single is the important part here.
Okay, and in fact, now that I'm hearing the description, it's not even fastest rap. It's most words in a hit single.
Most words in a hit single. Yeah.
You know what that means,
your
right?
hit single if could be 20 minutes long.
Right. If you had a hit single that was 20 minutes long, and you were singing, slower than Eminem was rapping.
Yeah.
You could still, win something. Oh, these are, yep. Ben, what this book is it's the proof copies of Mara and the Magicians. Do you know what Mara and the Magicians is, Ben?
I do not. What is Mara and the Magicians?
Is my young adult novel.
Oh, really?
That I am publishing through CreateSpace.
Ah.
And I am very happy with how this looks. And, it's about 241 pages. 1.5 type. It looks like a book. It looks like, that's all I can say. It looks like a book. And we'll see how it goes. But yeah. It's something I'm pretty excited about, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, good luck on that.
Yeah, I got it so that I could read a copy and Jennifer could read a copy.
Yeah.
And then once we read through it, then I'll proof it a little bit more, and then I'll make it available to people.
Excellent.
I can't even describe, Ben, the feeling I have holding this in my hand. It, I have Love and Time of Zombies already, which is a thing.
Yeah.
But this is a little bit more exciting.
I've actually been there. I've published a book through CreateSpace, and when you get that first copy in your hands and you feel the weight and the heft of it, it's pretty great.
Wait, Ben, what did you write through CreateSpace?
I didn't write it. I published my grandfather's memoirs.
Ben, you and I actually talked about this a long time ago.
Did we?
I think now, Ben, I've taken credit for what you've come up with a lot of times when we're talking about our act. But I think that when you were talking about your grandfather's memoirs, We actually had a conversation where I suggested if you could put it in PDF format, you should try CreateSpace. Now, whether or not you listened to me at the time, I really think it may have been this. I think it may have been this. When did you do it? Because I remember now when it was. When did this happen? When you published it?
I've been working on it for a number of years, but I finally published it in 2012.
Okay. I could be wrong about this, but I think when I did Love in a Time of Zombies through Create Space, we had a conversation about how it looked good.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, it was, if you're going to print something out, instead of taking it to Kinko's or whatever, do it this way.
Right.
And you said, there's some stuff that I've been thinking about doing. This would have been sometime between 2007, 2009. Wait, have you been working on it for longer than that?
I honestly don't even remember.
Ben, I'm responsible for your grandfather's memoirs.
Well, I'm glad you're taking credit for it.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with me, Ben? What is why am I like this?
Why are you like that?
I don't know. I'm so sorry.
I was I'm actually doing another manuscript, publishing another manuscript that he had that he'd written before he passed away that I've been working on for the last couple of years, and it's one of those things where when I got my hands on it and I read through it, I had this thought that I could make it better. You know, I thought, well, you know, I'll fix all the punctuation, of course, but I'll add little bits here and there. I'll clean up some of these messy paragraphs. I think the climax between the hero and the villain is a little thin, so I'll flesh that out a little bit more. So I've been going back and forth on that and just start like figuring out what I was gonna do, and I got to the point where I was actually like editing it and rewriting it and all that, and then I finally just realized no. You know what? These are Grandpa's words. Let Grandpa's words speak on their own. And who cares? Because there was also like he uses as a plot device amnesia. And I'm like, oh, I don't like amnesia as a plot device. Mm. But how can I change it? Can I make it so the guy's just pretending to have? So probably a good 2 years to sitting on it, just being, you know what? No, just clean it up, and that's it. Clean it up meaning like, you know, he take out all the M dashes, you know, put in commas where commas need to be. Just doing all that. So I'm working on that, and I'd like to get it published before the end of the year. But that means I got to start, you know, cooking on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, throw in just a couple car chases.
Yeah,
no matter when it takes place.
Just it's actually a Western. So it takes place in the 1860s in Eastern Oregon.
See, perfect. Throw in a couple car chases. People will be like, "What?" And the only two automobiles in existence at the time.
It's actually, I'll tell you what it'll be an interdimensional car chase where a portal opens and two cars fly through and another portal opens and they leave. And then it'll be, that'll connect it to my own sci-fi novel that I'm planning on publishing in 3 years. I'm not really, but.
Oh, Ben, you did it. You got to publish a sci-fi novel in 3 years.
And it has to have an interdimensional car chase where they visit 1860s Eastern Oregon.
Right, exactly. You put the two things, and that's the only connection between the two books. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's it. That's all.
Ben,
it is.
Ben, totally do it. Totally do it. All right, or even just a short story where it happens. And now it's time to yell for Betty. Betty.
Yeah.
Okay, so here I'm going to give Betty my earphone. Ben, this is Betty. You're familiar with her.
Hey, Betty.
Hi.
Okay, so Betty, explain to Ben, I'm not phrasing it right, but about how I need to stop trying to be hip with the kids.
If you ever try to be hip with the kids, somebody will judge you for it, always.
Okay, can you give me an example?
And also being hip with the kids is basically just talking about dead memes.
Yeah, talking about dead memes. If a meme is dead, Ben, you can't mention it.
How is there a meme obituary I can look up? How do I know when a meme has been put to bed?
Oh my gosh, Betty, think about it. A website called Meme Obituary, which has a list of all the dead memes that people can't use anymore.
This meme is survived by this derivative meme, this derivative meme.
Yes. Betty, can you tell me of a meme that I've used within the past 48 hours that's a dead meme?
Existing?
Oh my god. Oh, Jay. I got burnt.
What?
I got burnt.
I'm totally not following this.
I asked her if you thought of a dead meme that I've done recently, and she said existing. She's saying that I myself am a dead meme, Ben.
Wow, that's your daughter's throwing quite a lot of shade at you these days.
She throws shade at a friend of ours.
Oh yeah, also being burned is a dead meme too.
Oh god, being burned is a dead meme. She had a friend of ours described her as a quote savage unquote, and this person was a young person. And so that meant a good thing. That was a good. So yeah, that's it.
Is she savage? I'm done. AF.
Probably yes. I would say so. However, as I am her parent and an adult, I am putting her in braces. So
what?
Last laugh. No. Betty is getting. Betty, do you mind if I talk about your dental work?
We've already talked about the teeth that she had pulled.
What's that?
Nobody cares about my teeth anyway.
Okay, nobody cares about her teeth anyway. So yeah, she had four teeth pulled recently.
Right.
Because they were her long baby teeth.
Yeah.
And now she is getting other dental work done to adjust.
Is this a result of the baby teeth not leaving? Basically, so the other teeth have been kind of like growing around them?
That's right.
A Renaissance torture device for your face.
That's what Betty said, and she's right.
Is it going to be one of those full head braces?
No, it's not.
Do they even do that anymore? I remember. I think there was a TV show.
Braces. It's a medieval torture device.
There was a TV show, like an 80s sitcom. I was like Mr. Belvedere or Small Wonder or something. And there was a friend on the show, this little girl who had this full head brace for her braces.
Oh, yeah. That happens.
Yeah. I was wondering if they... hopefully, modern dental technology has advanced to the point where that's no longer necessary.
So, Betty has picked up the book and she's just shouting, "You made a book and this looks ridiculous."
No, it's actually the...
Oh, she was reading. It's in the book. That something looks ridiculous. So, all right. Anyhow.
Be sure to let me know when that book goes on sale.
I will, Ben. I will. I could even send you a proof copy, but I'm not going to because I'm not going to make you read a thing.
I probably wouldn't be able to read it before you needed to send in the final.
Well, I don't. It's my own. I'm on my own timeline for this one. Because it's Crate Space.
Yeah, but you want to do it sooner than later.
Yeah, I guess so.
I have a book on. I have three books sitting on my nightstand that I have not read. I've like read part of one. I'm terrible at setting time aside to read.
What's with the proof thing?
Oh, Betty asked what the proof thing was. Betty, these books are not final. Your mom and I are going to read them and mark them up with red ink and then
Dad will correct them.
Yep, exactly. So there you go. Ben, sorry.
Jennifer's going to grade you on depending
she's
on how
not
much gonna red
grade
ink
me.
She's going to
read it and then she's going to
No, I'm not going to read it.
No, Jennifer.
Yeah.
Betty.
Also to the people listening to like the one person listening to this.
Oh, there's at least two.
I'm actually going to start practicing a Norwegian accent. For reasons which you shouldn't be worried about, so shh.
She's going to be practicing a Norwegian accent? Did I hear that correctly?
That's right. For reasons you shouldn't be worrying about, so shh.
Okay, well, I wasn't going to worry, but is it like a Halloween costume theme
put
thing?
Put on some pants, because we're going to...
I don't know, maybe. Maybe it's a Halloween costume, but I don't know.
I wouldn't even
it's
be able to identify
a
Norwegian.
Halloween costume.
It's not actually part of a Halloween costume.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
you go.
That's good.
I believe that she's forging herself a false identity.
No, I'm not!
Getting ready to get right out of there once she turns 16.
Don't worry about it!
Yeah, she said, don't worry about it.
That's
okay,
the first thing
right
you should worry about.
Yeah. So, okay. I will talk to you more later, Ben.
Yeah, hey. Good talk.
As always, keep it wrong!
Keep it wrong, Paul.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, take care. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Yep. Bye.